You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 43 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I have Louise here with me today, who is going to talk about her son, Jacob, who's around 12 years old. Louise, you're a former teacher as well, so we definitely have that in common. So we'll start, if I may, just with sort of the early days of Jacob's Hirschsprung's journey. And you were also at Alder Hey, which seems to be incredibly popular with a lot of my guests. A lot of people seem to come or go to Alder Hey. Unfortunately, I haven't found anyone who's gone to Great Ormond Street yet, but there's still time. So if you talk us through just a little bit about Jacob's diagnosis, just to start off with.
Yeah, hi. So Jacob was, I had a completely normal pregnancy, no issues whatsoever, really kind of sailed through pregnancy. First child, I thought, you know, this is easy. And then Jacob was born again, straightforward birth, no interventions, everything was kind of fine. And again, myself and my husband just thought, oh, this is, you know, we've got a dream baby. He was quite quiet. He slept a lot. So, you know, the babies on the ward were crying and we thought we got lucky. And then my husband went home that evening and he came back to collect me to go home the next day. But luckily, a midwife basically said, has he had a poo? And I was like, oh, no, I don't think so. But I was really ready for going home. So I was like, it's fine. You know, I want to get him home. I just want to get back to my house. And she was like, luckily, she was adamant that I wasn't to go anywhere until the baby had passed his first poo. So after a while, kind of Paul came back to pick me up or to pick us up. And she came back and like I packed my bag. I was literally ready for going. And she came back, this midwife, and she was like, has he pooed? And I was like, no. And then kind of all of a sudden he started vomiting, really kind of obviously bright green bile. So we obviously got the doctors, the midwives came round and started kind of examining him because he'd been quite quiet. He'd fed a little bit, but nothing particularly to kind of worry about, I guess. And that's when they started like examining him and checking his tummy. They talked about obviously his tummy being swollen. And obviously that's when everything kind of goes into a bit of a blur, doesn't it? Because you just don't really know what's going on. And then they basically rushed him kind of upstairs. So upstairs where I had him at Royal Preston Hospital, they had a neonatal ward, but they wanted to kind of check him out. So they took him up there. And I remember, it's really silly now, but Paul had bought me a balloon. And I was in like a real like daze, and you know, because obviously we were upset, and I was adamant that he brought this balloon up to and he was like, you know, probably looking at me going, she's gone insane, this woman. But yeah, so we kind of moved upstairs to the neonatal ward, and at that point we were just sat and we were unsure as to what was going on. And by this point my family were texting and going, are you home yet? You know, let us know when you're home, we want to come see the baby. So our phones were being inundated, but we obviously couldn't reply because we didn't know what was going on. And then after, I can't even tell you how long, it might have been 10 minutes, it might have been an hour, because I just felt like I was not there, to be honest. A senior doctor came, sat us down quite seriously. And to be honest, the way that she worded it wasn't great. When looking back and reflecting back, it was, I didn't know whether it meant that he was going to survive. The way that she worded it, it was, he's got a vast blockage in his bowel. He's very poorly. We need to get him to a children's hospital as soon as possible. And kind of that was it. So as you can imagine, my head was swimming. I felt like I wasn't there. I'm sure Paul felt the same, but being the good dad and husband he is, he was, you know, he was my rock. Yeah. And they said he'll either go to Alder Hey or Manchester Children's. And then within kind of 15 minutes, they said there's a bed at Alder Hey. So they bundled him up. They wouldn't let us travel with him. He had to obviously go in an ambulance on his own at 24. hours old. So that was really traumatic in itself, just that being parted from your baby. I'm going to get emotional now. That's not like it. So we had to kind of let him go to Alder Hey, and they said, you know, we didn't get any more information than that at that point. They said, meet him there, go home, get an overnight bag for both of you. You might be there for a while. So obviously we tried to let family know as best we could. We just said he's poorly, he's going to Alder Hey, and we kind of diverted at our house. We got a few bits. I've not eaten a thing all day because of the worry. It was just an awful time, really. When looking back and telling the story again, it actually does like really bring it all back. And then we got to Alder Hey. It must have been about 11:30 at night, so it was really late, obviously, and really tired. They'd only given birth the day before, so you can imagine how emotional and where my hormones were. And I remember we phoned the ward. He'd been transferred to the neonatal surgical ward at Alder Hey, and we walked onto the ward, and I'll be honest, crying my eyes out. And I remember there's two nurses I'll give a big shout out to. Mary Hughes, because I'm sure she'll listen to this when I tell her I've recorded it. And as I walked on, in a lovely thick Scouse accent, she said she basically grabbed hold of me, pulled me into a bear hug and just said, he'll be okay. He will be okay. And then another nurse, Andrea Fellow, who's still kind of friends with now, which is lovely. They were just so reassuring, and they were just like, you need to calm down. We're going to find out what's up with him, and we'll get him sorted. So they were just, compared to the doctor who had given us that news at Preston, they were just so positive. They asked if we'd eaten, and we were like, no. So they blessed them, and I always tell this story. They brought, like nurses do, they have loads of food, you know, because they were working the night shift, and they put us in a side room, and they shared their food with us. They gave us Rocky Road. They had nachos with cheese on, and they gave us some of that. They were just so like lovely and supportive, and instantly kind of made us feel like he was going to be all right, I guess. They also asked, which was really important and probably quite an important point to make, that did I want to breastfeed? And I was like, well, I wanted to, but that's gone out the window now. They were like, no, it's not. So they got me in a room, they got me expressing, and said, we can get you expressing, and when he's ready to start feeding, we'll have all your milk to give him. And I think if they hadn't done that, then I wouldn't have breastfed, and I did end up breastfeeding Jacob for a year. So they were brilliant at that as well, and really supportive. And then basically, obviously, the doctors come, they start testing, they talked about it possibly might be cystic fibrosis, which was obviously quite a worry, because I think sometimes bowel blockages are quite common in that condition as well. And then they mentioned Hirschsprung's disease, and that they were going to like look for that. So of course, myself and Paul never heard of it. Started Googling it, couldn't really get much information. There wasn't much out there. You know, it was 2012, and although that's not that long ago, there just wasn't much out there. And luckily, my best friend actually works, she's a physio, but she works kind of with bowels in adults and women's health. And she was like, oh, Hirschsprung's. She was like, honestly, if it's that, it'll be all right, Louise, it'll be all right. So I think that reassurance from Claire did help a little bit as well. So they did some bowel biopsies, and at 5 days old, they also created a stoma. So his blockage was very vast, and it couldn't be managed with irrigations and washouts. So they decided to create a stoma, and he had an ileostomy at 5 days old. And then at 10 days old, the diagnosis came back. So it was 10 days when we got that Hirschsprung's diagnosis. And then, of course, at that point, I didn't even know that there was short segment or long segment or 12.
No.
So we didn't know what would be next, really. And then, yeah, we went home with a stoma, which was traumatic in itself, I'll be honest. You don't expect to be going home 2 weeks later than planned and with a stoma. And there was a lot of trauma around that. I didn't feel we got a lot of support with the stoma. We did from the nurses on the ward. Don't get me wrong, they helped us. But following that, like in the community, and I don't know if that's because we were kind of out of the catchment of Liverpool, so we live near Chorley, and I don't know if we were in between like community, I'm not sure, but we didn't get any support, and his bags kept leaking, and I was getting obviously upset. I couldn't take him anywhere because the bags were leaking, and then bless him, Paul did loads of research, and we started using like a hairdryer to get the phalanges to fit. And eventually we got, you know, a lot of help from friends and people researching lots of little tips and techniques. And we got there, and, you know, I was then able to start taking him out and enjoying having a newborn baby, really. And then he went back in for pull-through surgery at about 12 weeks old. He was under anaesthetic for about 9 hours. So it was really long surgery. And when he came back around, they said that they'd taken most of his large bowel. So Mr. Bailey, his doctor, who is now retired, but was fantastic, kind of described it as extended long segment Hirschsprung's disease. So it kind of wasn't short and it wasn't total colonic, but basically most of his colon was taken, and they had to kind of, the little tiny bit that's left, they had to flip it around to kind of reconnect. So that was kind of like the start of it, really. He was very poorly after his pull through. He also, unluckily for Jacob, he started kind of really struggling with his breathing not long after his surgery. And he was diagnosed with, I think it was bronchitis at the time. So he must have got that just the day before he went into hospital, just really unlucky. And he was quite seriously poorly. He was so, Mr. Bailey, the doctor, the surgeon, was very worried. And he actually came in on his day off to check on him. He walked on the ward in his jeans and his shirt, and he just said, I'm just concerned. And he ended up having a blood transfusion, actually, Jacob, to help with getting more oxygen around his little body. Mm. So he was quite poorly, but obviously he recovered from that. And then he got a line infection. So he had like a line going into his neck, and that got infected. So it was, that pull-through surgery was quite traumatic, in the sense it was a really long surgery, and then there was complications after it. But obviously everything went really well, and all the hay, as I said, were fantastic. And we got home, I think it was about 2 weeks later, and he did his first poo on our first wedding anniversary.
Oh, that was a nice present.
So our first wedding anniversary was in Ronald McDonald House, and we celebrated his first poo.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing. That's an awful lot of info, but thank you. Thank you so much. And this is why I wanted to talk to you as well, because I like having lots of different Hirschsprung stories, and everybody has their own story to tell, and it's all full of ups and downs. And I think the last thing I want to do is just do one or two stories and then say, yeah, everything will be fine, et cetera, et cetera. But for your story, it's, and I know we're only partway through, but it is full of ups and downs. And possibly as well, some people listening to this will think, I'm the only one going through this at this time. And then to hear your story of, we had this, and then this happened, and then this infection and that infection, to know that those things, you know, unfortunately do happen, and that people aren't the only ones as such.
Yeah, it's definitely, and that was one of the things. I think when Jacob was born and diagnosed with this, obviously you feel like you're on your own, because it's a rare condition. It's still, you know, to this day, people are like, oh, what's that? I've never heard of that. Even some medical professionals, you know, haven't heard of it, always heard of it. I remember taking him, seeing out of doctor in the night when he was possibly about 3 or 4, and again, they'd not heard of it before, which I completely get. They can't know everything, everything. But it's just, it was such a daunting time, not knowing what it was. And I guess kind of my feelings are, obviously, that ups and downs, it's still very much like that now. And kind of one of the things I wanted to like touch upon, really, that while the pull-through surgery was successful, obviously things are not always easy for Jacob, and you know, it's a tough gig having Hirschsprung's, and it, you know, some websites will lead you to believe that once the pull through has happened, they've got a cure. You know, whilst that's kind of medically true in the sense that they can then poo normally, actually living without a large bowel or some of your bowel is really impactful. And I think for Jacob, we've definitely seen lots and lots of ups and downs, and even at the age of 12, you know, still getting that. Although at the moment, it's in a kind of a fairly good place with it, but that's a very new thing.
No, I think that's important to stress as well, because today I think it's around 25 plus episodes of the podcast out of 43 are Hirschsprungs related, and everybody has a little bit of a different story to tell. I take something away from every single person, as well as my own story. I mean, some, as you said, you know, some people have come on and they've said, well, had the pull through it X amount of months, now everything's fine, and that's great, that's wonderful, fantastic. And then I've had sort of from all extremes, you know, from, and then, you know, having all manner of surgeries, like myself having 10 surgeries and everything in between. So it is very individual, if that makes sense. And then it's just sort of the aim, I guess, of the podcast is to kind of show that there are lots of different types out there, and but there are also lots of people who are thriving as well. Jacob definitely sounds like he's thriving.
Oh, he is, and he's nothing stops him at all. You know, he's in a football team, he's got loads of friends, he's recently taken fishing randomly. Yeah, he loves his Xbox. So in that sense, obviously, completely normal kind of preteen, we'll call him, very much going through the preteen stage. But obviously his Hirschsprungs does stop some things. You know, he at the moment still hasn't ever slept at a friend's house. And that's not through him, he wants to, but because of his care needs, that can't happen just yet. Equally, he hasn't had a friend sleep here for the same reason. Although we are, like I said, with the treatment that he's on at the moment, things are looking brighter and better, and hopefully that can happen soon. You know, in the early days, you know, you can't go on long journeys. And so, as we spoke about earlier, Jacob's an Aston Villa fan. We often go to the games. We have family in Birmingham. And we've been to kind of Villa Park to watch a football game. And we've left Villa Park, got in the car to travel home up the M6, and you know, the inevitable has happened, and we've had to kind of divert and turn back to Birmingham and go back to Grandma's to sort Jacob out. So in some ways it does impact some things, but obviously he's got loads of resilience, tons of it, and just tries to get on with, you know, a normal life. But I think it's important to point out that, of course, if you've not got most of your bowel, there are going to be issues.
Yeah, of course.
In the main. And, you know, for some, it'll be more severe than others. And that's quite a difficult thing to get your head around, because, like you said earlier, I know of a family who've got a little boy with total colonic, and they've literally had no issues since pull through. Like, no issues whatsoever. Whereas Jacob's got a little bit of his colon left, just a little bit, and probably a pointless bit, to be honest. But we've had more issues. And it's really difficult to get your head around how everyone's so different as well.
Yeah, I think so. And certainly in my experience of talking to so many people, whether they've been on this podcast or whether I've just sort of spoken to them, you know, via Instagram or whatever, there are so many different types. And I know you said as well about, you know, not knowing about the five different types and whatnot. And to be honest, until a year ago, I only thought there was one type. I only thought there was a short segment of Hirschsprungs, and that was it. And I had to do sort of my own research, because obviously for doing the podcast. And you're right, there's still a lot of work to be done there, I think. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are a lot of people who do fantastic work. A few charities out there. There's people who, you know, write blogs, et cetera, et cetera. But I think when you said you still go to see doctors and say, oh, then he has Hirschsprung's disease, and they go, what's that, etc.
Yeah.
How do you, because I seem to find this with a lot of different people, but how do you explain that? Because I kind of got it down to a couple of sentences in the end, from about three paragraphs. But if you go to a doctor and they say, oh, you say, oh, he has Hirschsprungs, and they say, not heard of it. What's that? How do you sort of, in a a quick way explain that?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck. Fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I think I just kind of say it's where the nerves in the bowel walls haven't developed or are missing, and therefore they're the nerves that basically contract and push the poo out of your body, so it can't be pushed out. It's kind of as simple as that, really.
Brilliant. That's so much more succinct than mine.
The hand gestures maybe help as well, you know. But yeah, it's just, and that's just a simple way of explaining it. Yeah, and then to if I was explaining it to perhaps somebody that didn't want to know too much detail, I would just say he's got a stomach problem. I would just, you know, and if Jacob is telling a friend and he doesn't want to go into the depth and detail of what it is, then I think it's accepted that a stomach problem or a stomach issue is the norm, and that's fine. So yeah,
definitely. No, that's a brilliant explanation. I think that can often be a tricky one to explain to friends. I know I've had that before when explaining to people, and you kind of almost play it down a little bit and kind of go, oh, stomach issues occasionally.
I think we was well in it. Some people don't like talking about bowels and poo, and I'll be honest, for us, it's all we've talked about since the day Jacob was born. So it's very, very normal kind of in this household. Because it has to be. And of course, when my second child was born, there was a big watch over Max for his first poo. And, you know, they kept me in hospital again until that happened. And Max is fine and doesn't have Hirschsprung's disease. But it's just kind of, even to his younger brother, Max, he's a fantastic like little brother as well. And, he would say things like, "Mummy, Jacob's tummy looks very swollen. I think he might need to go to the toilet." You know, when he was little.
Wow.
So he used to really kind of understand and get involved. I mean, now Max is nearly 10 and Jacob's 12. So he's like, oh, I'm just thinking, they just ignore each other in that respect now. But Max very much got involved in his kind of care and understood what to look for and stuff when he was little as well. So yeah, it's just kind of very.
That's fantastic. That's so good that he's so aware, and that it kind of helps, I guess, in a way. And another thing as well that has sort of fascinated me a little bit about people who have a child with Hirschsprung's and then have another child, like my parents did. Were you given like the odds as such of then having another child with Hirschsprung's in a sort of percentage way?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we were given it by the team at all. Hey, I think we just knew that, it was something like 1 in 7. So the likelihood was that we wouldn't have another child with it. But again, I know from knowing about other families that I've read about that sometimes they've had two children and both children have got Hirschsprungs. But I'm sure the numbers at the time was like 1 in 7. But it went down, it went up, sorry, if you had another boy, which we did. But yeah. So we kind of knew that we knew the risk, and there was a lot of talk and a lot of chatting about whether to have a second one because of Hirschsprungs. But yeah, we decided to just, yeah. And Max, his span doesn't have it.
It's fantastic. That's really good to hear. Really good to hear. And I know you wanted to touch on, and I know we've spoken a little bit about it early on, but you wanted to touch on sort of the mental and emotional impact of having a chronic illness and the real need for more support in that area.
Yeah, I think it's something Jacob massively struggles with. So whilst I said earlier on that he's a very normal 12-year-old, plays football, you know, he's so positive and he has so much resilience, he doesn't realise how much. He does struggle with it, you know, and it has done for a long, long time. And like the team at Alder Hey, the nurses, the surgical team, the team who still look after him now, are fantastic, you know, can't fault them from a medical point of view. But I just feel as a mum, and you know, Paul would agree, my husband, that there's no support for, you know, like you said, it's not just Hirschsprungs, I guess, but for children living with chronic conditions that really do impact their everyday life. And I remember one time, you know, a couple of years ago, Jacob started having real kind of anger issues, really quite out of character, and not to go on for too long, but they got to the point where they were really distressing. He was trying to harm himself sometimes. He was upturning his bedroom, and this kind of went on for a few months. And myself and Paul, my husband, we at the time thought it was down to having Hirschsprungs and not dealing with it very well, because at that point in time things were a real struggle. He was having accidents in the day, obviously at night time it was constant, like every single night he was up at 2 a.m. in the shower, we were changing his bedding. And it was just a real, real kind of hard on him. And it was every single day. It was relentless, really. So we just put the anger down to kind of Hirschsprungs. But again, when I mentioned that in an appointment, there wasn't really anything. And I'm not blaming all like the doctors at that time. They didn't have a service that they could refer us to, basically. They kind of just were like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. It's not like they could go, oh yes, Jacob, let's refer you to this service because you're struggling to deal with this condition. There was nothing for them to refer him to. We just had to keep going. And, you know, I know we might touch upon this later on, but it transpired that actually with lots of other issues going on, Jacob was eventually diagnosed in 2023 with ADHD. Presents quite differently to what you would expect with his ADHD. It's what you call a masker. So in, you know, outside of the home at school, presents kind of like the perfect child, works really hard, he's academic, lots of friends. But actually what was really going on, he was masking at every moment. And when he came home, that was when obviously he was erupting a bit like a bottle of fizzy pop, just kind of erupting. And he couldn't. And although we now know that some of that was the anger with the Hirschsprungs, and he still is very angry, don't get me wrong, that's not gone away. He still has evenings where he doesn't want to engage in his irrigation system. He still says, I'm not having it. And we kind of, what, you know, he's 12 now, we can't force him to have it. We can only tell him the benefits of having it. But yeah, we figured out that kind of the anger at the Hirschsprungs, as well as being neurodiverse, it was just all just too much. And so once he got the diagnosis of ADHD, actually, it really helped. He is medicated for that, and he can regulate his emotions better, which I think means he can deal with his Hirschsprungs better. Yeah. But it's not perfect. But yeah, I just really wish there was more out there to support. School were great. They did put him through some counselling at one point, and we paid for some private counselling. It didn't really work out. It was during lockdown. It ended up having to be on Zoom, and It just, you can't get that kind of connection, I guess. But when school referred him and he had some sessions with a local charity, actually, he really liked that. It was face to face, and he had a good connection with the girl, the counsellor called Becky. And he had some support there, and she kind of gave him some tools to use. But I just feel like, yeah, there's not enough emotional support for children who are living with these kind of chronic conditions. And I guess that's something that I wanted to talk about a little bit. There was a charity, so Champs Appeal was a fantastic charity that existed. Unfortunately, that's closed now. There is still a Facebook group that's live and active. So if anyone's listening to this and they wonder, you know, is there a Facebook group? There is one, Champs Appeal support group. And there's loads and loads of parents in there who, you know, have all got children with Hirschsprungs. But I think, yeah, it's just, I don't know what the answer is, because we know that mental health services are at crisis point anywhere in this country. It's just something that I just wanted to kind of talk about, because he has struggled, you know, he really has, and it's still not easy now. And I just kind of wanted to make sure the message was out there, really, that it's not just when they have the surgery, it's not just fixed, it's not gone. And you know, like you said earlier, for some it might be, you know, but I would imagine that most Hirschsprung's patients have some degree of emotional kind of upset, or, you know, frustration or anger, or physical symptoms, which is what Jacob has as well, that impact his day-to-day life.
Definitely. And I think that's so important to touch on. And again, that's why I want to get, you know, lots of different perspectives, because not everybody's the same. They do go through lots of different ups, downs, challenges, etc. And I know we were talking a little bit about Champs, and I know it's defunct now. But when you were sort of a part of Champs, what kind of things did they do?
Yeah, so Champs was just a really good place to talk to people who were going through the same thing, you know. So you'd get in touch with someone, and actually you can still do that on the Facebook group. So, you know, recently Jacob was admitted into Alder Hey just this year. He had suspected entery colitis again. So he has had it for 3 or 4 times and has had various kind of hospital stays with it. But you kind of sometimes question yourself, because you go into a bit of panic, you know, is it entry colitis or is it just a bug? So even in that group, I just popped on, you know, he's feeling like this. He feels, you know, like lethargic. He's got a bit of a temp. His poo's changed. What would you do? And I think the support from that community, they just kind of go, no, take him in. Don't kind of hesitate. So just that level of support. But in terms of the charity when it was running, it was run by another mum called Sarah. And it was fantastic. So she would arrange events for families and children with Hirschsprung's disease. And there would always be a Christmas party. So all the kind of community, the Hirschsprung's community, came together for a Christmas party. There would be Father Christmas, there would be food. And the charity would pay for the families to travel and to stay in the location of where the party was. So I think that the whole point of the fundraising was actually to bring Hirschsprung's families together. So you've got that community and that support network. She also used to organise days out. So I remember one year we went to Eureka in Halifax. And obviously the charity paid for the tickets for the family to go. And again, supported some families with travel if they couldn't, you know, drive over there. And, you know, the day was ours to go around and do what we want. But we all met at lunchtime and had a picnic. And you got to kind of, you know, you got to know people. And, you know, I still to this day have some kind of friends, you know, on social media who were from that community when we used to go to them events. So it was a really, really good kind of place for support and a fantastic charity. It has, like I say, it has now kind of closed. And I understand why, you know, Sarah, her son Jacob with Hirschsprung's is kind of, he's grown up and he's kind of moving on in his life. And she didn't have the support of her mum anymore, who sadly passed away. So she just felt, and she'd given so much, you know, she felt like the time was right to kind of shut the door on that, which is absolutely fine. But the support that she and that charity provided was superb, really. So I know we talked about, hopefully one day there might be something for new families, you know, coming through, we need that support as well.
I think so. I mean, there definitely is an opening in this country for a Hirschsprungs charity. I know, obviously, I do my work with Reach, and there are lots of other,
there are obviously lots of other charities around the world, and they do bits and pieces. But just specifically for UK, there is definitely an opening for a charity. And obviously, it is very much needed as well, in terms of all charities needed. But yes, definitely a Hirschsprungs charity. If there's somebody listening that wants to start opening up a charity, it will be very much needed. And I think also, I know we were talking as well off air, you know, about charities, and that we'd both be willing to, you know, support somebody if they had the idea and wanted to go, right, you know, I want to do this chat or make this charity. I think that there would definitely be the support from people like us and lots of other people that I know and have interviewed as well, that would be very happy to lend a hand. But I think, yeah, I think definitely very much needed. And as we work sort of towards the back end of this, I'd like to talk a little bit about Jacob now, and how he sort of, I know you talked a little bit about his ADHD and hyperfocus, but he's also very, very much into football, isn't he?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimising your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
He's massive into football. That is, we always wondered throughout his childhood why he had obsessions with different things. And, you know, children do get kind of focused on certain toys or characters, but it was always the extreme with Jacob. He could, you know, he could name the Star Wars characters, every single one, at the age of like two. I think he was younger than two. He got obsessed with Indiana Jones for like a year. I mean, Indiana Jones at the age of four. And it's because he watched the film once with his dad, and then everything was Indiana Jones. He had the outfit, he had a birthday cake. It was, so as we kind of look back on things, we now realise why he, you know, he had those what we call hyperfocus, because the ADHD brain is fantastic at focusing on kind of one thing. And the one thing that has been a constant for Jacob, and he is obsessed with, is football. Playing it, talking about it, playing it on the Xbox. He collects match tack cards, and we must have 500,000 match tack cards that he has in a big box. And he said, you know, we're never getting rid of them. I want to be able to show my children them. So they're going in the loft at some point because I've got to keep hold of them. He's a massive Aston Villa fan. So, you know, we go as much as we can because we live up in Lancashire. We have family in Birmingham. So we do try and get to the games when we can. But so he's kind of still 12 years later obsessed with football. He's always been massively into it. And he does go through phases. And again, now we know why he has these phases. So he throws everything into like a new hobby, or he throws everything into doing something. And sometimes after a week, he's done with it. And he does that with food as well. So recently he's he's got into fishing. Again, typical Jacob, just as the weather's changing and getting a bit nasty, he decides he wants to do fishing. And he's kind of been doing that quite regularly. But I know, and Paul knows, that at some point that will stop. And the rod that he bought himself out of his birthday money will just sit in the garage for the next kind of, well, forever. He does have a lot of the hyper focus. But obviously, to some extent, it can be really great because it means he gets really good at things. And, you know, in terms of like school and things, that's a real positive. But it does mean that you have to be patient because he does switch quite a lot. And then the food issues, I'll touch upon the food issues as well, because that's kind of pertinent to Hirschsprungs. And one thing I think my husband wanted to kind of me to talk about was that when we talked earlier about kind of support, there was never any support with food either. Like, I didn't know what he would be able to eat or what he couldn't eat. And again, for some Hirschsprung children, they can eat whatever. But we knew from early on that Jacob, with dairy, he was very intolerant to dairy. So if he ate ice cream, or he had proper milk, cow's milk, his bowel habits would change and would be worse than ever. And obviously he lives without a colon, so his stool is very, very kind of liquid anyway. So when he has dairy, it's just so much worse. So we tried to push for some support with food issues, but there wasn't really much there. At one point, we got an appointment with a gastroenterologist who kind of advised that he follow a low-fibre diet, in the sense that kind of he doesn't need fibre because he goes enough to the toilet as it is. So try and avoid fibre. So we followed like a low residue diet, which is really challenging because actually it's things like, you know, like a lot of fruit and vegetables obviously have that fibre in, and they were almost saying avoid it. Avoid brown bread, avoid kind of like cereal, breakfast cereal, because it will make symptoms worse. So food was always a bit of a challenge as well. And then when he started presenting more with his ADHD symptoms, I'll be honest, food is the bane of my life, because he now has limited his foods to, I could probably tell you about 10 foods that he will eat. And again, he gets that hyper focus with them as well. So last week he was obsessed with eating the Dairy Leaf packs with crackers and ham in. And I was like, oh, good, another food. So I stocked up. So I got like 10 in the fridge. And then 5 days later, he's like, I don't want them anymore. And it's really hard because as a mummy and dad, you just want to go, stop wasting our money. You know, ridiculous. But obviously you've got to be sympathetic that it is part of his ADHD. And he's also got challenge with food from his Hirschsprungs as well. So food has been a real challenge and still is very much, like I said, the bane of my life. Planning what we're going to eat in a week is really difficult. I just have to rotate like literally 3 meals for Jacob. And we have to just accept that that's the way it is. And it's really hard when you're parents and you're trying to make sure they eat healthily and that you're trying to give them nutritious food. But his ADHD means that he struggles with sensory issues, and part of that sensory issue is food, and has his safe foods. And it's tricky. So it's navigating Hirschsprung's disease with ADHD has been a real challenge.
Yes.
And I think sometimes that's why he can be quite resistant to his irrigation. So he does have irrigation at night. And I was saying earlier before we came on the podcast that most nights now he is okay with it. But some nights he just isn't. He just can't accept in his head why he's having it, why he's having to do it. It's not fair. It's not right. So therefore, I'm not doing it. And we just have to kind of let him navigate that himself now, because he's 12. We just have to try and persuade him that actually the result of having it means that you can sleep all night.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah. It's been an interesting couple of years.
Yeah, to say the least. Absolutely. But I think, again, you talk about a lot of things that people will have gone through before. And I know, obviously, when I had to do the washouts and whatnot from the age of 9 to about 15, that sort of 12, 13, 14 period, it is really tough. You know, you just don't want to do it, you know, but you kind of have to. Otherwise, there'll be further problems down the line and you kind of have to accept it, but you don't really want to accept it. And it is very tough. And
he knows it benefits him, but yeah. Then he also knows that his friends don't have to do it. Yeah. And why has he been? And this is where the anger comes and the frustration and the upset. You know, there's nights when he cries because and this is the challenging bit of Hirschsprung that I kind of did want to wanted to come on and talk about, because it's that frustration when I read things that they've had the pull through surgery and everything's hunky dory. Well, for some it's not, and it's not that we want to shout that out to the world, but I want other parents to be aware of some of the challenges you might face down the line. So your toddler or your baby might be doing really well now because they're in nappies, but it might be that, you know, down the line there are further struggles. And I just think having that real open and honest conversation about it, yeah, is just going to better prepare people. Fingers crossed there won't be any issues, yeah, but there might be, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I think you've done a fantastic job in that. And that's the thing as well. That's why I want so many different stories, you know, because there are so many different things out there. There are so many different types. There are so many different stories. There are so many different things that people go through. And I think it's fantastic to highlight all of that. And again, it can be, it's not necessarily something that people want to, you know, go through or anything like that, or even talk about to some extent. So I commend you highly on coming on and chatting about this, because I think it's fantastic to highlight. And just very quickly before we wrap up, in terms of, I know you said Jacob doing really well at the moment, and long may that continue. In terms of sort of the future looking like, obviously sometimes it can be very uncertain, and I think we know that. But what would you like to see sort of for Jacob in the future?
I guess you just want him to be happy, don't you? And that sounds cheesy, but I just want him to be able to lead a normal life, you know. And we try, kind of like going back to when we spoke earlier about, you know, having a sleepover, that he can have a friend sleep over, or he can go to his mate's house as he gets a bit older. And if he still needs to use an irrigation system, he can just pop along to the toilet, do it himself. And, you know, everything's fine. And he sees that treatment as just part and parcel of his everyday life. But I understand that we get that that's really difficult. And obviously we just want him to go on and do really well at school and get a good job and, you know, do whatever he wants as he gets older. And I think he will. Like, I don't sit here and think, oh, it's going to stop him from doing anything. It absolutely won't stop him from doing anything. I guess my uncertainty at the moment is whether he will continue working, continue with the bowel washouts. And he might get to a point where he doesn't need them. You know, I know you said you stopped at 15. But not long ago, the doctor at Alder Hey, because we were having that much difficulty, in fact, it was only last year, basically said, we've got this last thing to try, or he can have a stoma. And they literally said, we can book him in now. If we think that a stoma will give him a better quality of life, we can book him in now. And obviously I was like, oh, that was quite shocked that they would do it that quickly. But I think we'd been to lots of appointments prior to that, and we tried lots of different things, and nothing was really helping or working. But Jacob didn't want to. He didn't want a stoma, and he still doesn't really want a stoma. And the irrigations are helping massively. So I think it's, for me, we just need him to understand. And I think there's just a bit of immaturity yet. You know, he's only just turned 12. That some people have to have medicine. And yep, this form of medicine, my husband has to have medicine every day. And he tries to say that it's just a different form of medicine. And if that medicine helps you day to day, and function normally, then it's absolutely okay. And he takes his ADHD medication, you know, with no problem, because I suppose it's a tablet and it's gone. And he knows how that helps him and supports him. We just need him to accept that his irrigation is doing the same thing in a different way. So, yeah, I guess the future, it would be brilliant if he could stop the irrigations and then, you know, everything is kind of functions normal and he doesn't have accidents and he doesn't have problems in the night. And that might come. I guess that's the problem with Hirschsprung's. It's literally like a bumpy road. It's never, ever straightforward. You think you've cracked it, and we've been through this so many times. You think you've cracked it, we've sorted it, it can come out of pull-ups, and then boom, it all just goes to pot again. So we're very much kind of aware that, yeah, there's still a long road ahead, but it looks better at the moment. You know, you can kind of see a light at the end of the tunnel, so hopefully by the time he gets to kind of 15, 16, 17, you know, he might be in a position where he can move away from the irrigation like you did, and you know, but we just don't know, I guess.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I wish all of you, yourself, Jacob, Paul, and I see you have a lovely dog at the background as well.
Yeah. Monty in there, Monty the Sprocker.
Well, I wish, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story, sharing Jacob's story, and I wish you all the best in the future.
No, thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprung's Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprung's_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.